As you may be able to notice, I still have a little bit of the cold that's been plaguing me for the last week. But I have to confess, I feel a lot better than I did last Sunday. And I was feeling pretty good about the week at large. I had a chance to do all of my reading, to spend some time with my commentaries, to reflect on the book of Job and what I was going to say today, and then also about what I was going to try to sum up for the last few weeks as we've been exploring this Old Testament prophet. Well, you may have noticed that the lesson today was not from the book of Job. It was from Matthew's gospel. And I'll tell you why we are doing Matthew rather than Job. To do that, I want to bring you back to last Sunday, when all the conversation was suddenly about caravans coming from Honduras and Guatemala. And that had displaced all of the talk about the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Then we set the caravans aside and we focused on the stock market, which had a correction and lost all of the gains of 2018. Then there was the news of a pipe bomb showing up in George Soros's mailbox. And now I was getting a little bit leery of preaching on Job, but I thought our job in the church isn't always to respond to current events. So I was still going to preach my sermon, and it was titled Honest to God, and I actually got to do a run-through on Wednesday afternoon, which was unheard of for me. I never, ever find myself that far ahead of the curve. So, of course, I had to remember, do not count my chickens before they have hatched. The pipe bomb sent to Mr. Soros was quickly followed by news of packages sent to President Obama and Hillary Clinton and Maxine Waters and a whole list of Democratic Party luminaries. And that's when I paused. And I remembered something that I have read by an English political columnist by the name of Matt Chorley, who writes for the Times of London. Politics in the UK, as you know, have been kind of wild for the last couple of years with Brexit and the Labour Party and all sorts of weird things going on. And some time ago, Mr. Chorley noted, "This is not normal." And he has deployed that statement over and over and over again over the last year or so. This is not normal. Now, I think that sentiment applies to our current situation. This is not normal. One of the great things about humanity is its ability to adapt, to change on the fly, to make do with new circumstances, to even thrive under adversity. But there is always a downside to any strength, to any asset. And that is, as we are making these adjustments and accommodating ourselves, sometimes we start telling ourselves stories and we start telling ourselves lies. And we start telling ourselves that, you know what, maybe things aren't that different than they used to be. Politicians have always been nasty. People have called one another names. People refer back to the election between Jefferson and Adams and remember some of the things that were said then, or how people said Abraham Lincoln was a monkey. Just the same, right? No, it's not just the same. This is not normal. So I was going to preach a sermon. I considered calling it This Is Not Normal, but I thought I would talk about the challenge of living together. Events, though, continued to hurtle along. And the alleged perpetrator, was identified and it looked like the story was going to start moving on. And then yesterday occurred. This is not normal. 11 people were killed, 11 Jewish people were killed at a worship service. A number of other people were injured, including police officers. and the man who did this was a self-professed anti-Semite. This happened here in America in 2018. This isn't stuff that happens in Europe. It isn't stuff that just happens in the Middle East. It isn't stuff that just happens in the past. We have honest to goodness Jew haters in our midst. And we've talked about all the other hate that is present with us. And this is not normal. So I haven't billed this as such, but this is your election sermon. And I am not going to tell you for whom you should vote. Because the Johnson Act has not been repealed. And I value our tax-exempt status too much. And frankly, you all have your own opinions and really wouldn't want me to tell you how you should vote. But I am going to say this. It is not just your civic duty, but it is your vocation as Christians or members of this community to go and vote. You need to voice your opinion. And this is not an election about immigration or taxes or foreign policy. This is an election about who we are as a people. It's that simple. And who we are for us should not be dictated by whether we're Democrat or Republican or independent. It should be based on our theology. If you are not bringing your faith into the voting booth, then you are saying something else is more important to you than God. It's that simple. Now, both the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament give us some clues as to how we might want to vote. Remember, take care of the widows and the orphans, look out for the poor, pay attention to prisoners, welcome the refugee. It's all there. If you have a red letter Bible, Jesus says this stuff. Now, I know that the temptation these days, for some of us at least, might be to just throw up our hands and say, to hell with it. I'm just going to walk away. Everything's just too corrupt. The train has left the station, and I don't want to deal with it. And some of you may have seen a book last year by Rod Dreher called The Benedict Option. The idea was that Christians could not live in such a corrupt society, and all they could hope to do was go off in their own communities and put their heads down and wait for the storm to pass over. If you listen to today's lesson from Matthew, that's not what Jesus would do. If you listen carefully, you will have noticed that there was reference to the Pharisees colluding with the Herodians. And this is the only time they are mentioned, the Herodians. But religious figures were working with politicians. And one thing we've seen all throughout history is that when the two get together, it is always the religious people who wind up compromising their beliefs. What does it profit a man to gain the world if he loses his soul? What does it profit a man to gain a judgeship if he loses his soul? You can elaborate on that. Evangelicals aren't the only ones who have done this. Mainline Protestants have too. And it's always wrong. It is always wrong. These two parties, the Pharisees and the Herodians, thought they were going to trip up Jesus. That they were going to get him to give an answer about taxation that would either paint him as a seditionist or as a hypocrite. And you can just imagine they're rubbing their hands together. They finally figured it out. Jesus is going down. And then he gives this amazing answer. It is brilliant. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. Now, I don't think that Jesus was being clever there. And I don't think he's saying that nothing goes to Caesar and you need to keep everything for yourself. Christians were told that they were not of the world, but they were in it. They needed to be engaged in their communities, but they needed to do so thoughtfully. That means sometimes we've got to speak up. Sometimes we've got to say, enough is enough. Frankly, a long time ago, I thought we had reached peak stupid. We're not there yet. And if we don't take a stand, go and vote, get involved in the community, stupid is going to be even bigger and badder than we ever imagined. This is not going to be a gun control sermon, but I will note that I was appalled when the president, offering his words of sympathy, which were appreciated, then went on to say that if there had been an armed guard in the synagogue, things would have been better. No! A house of worship should not become a battleground. And to tell a Jewish community that they need to defend themselves with arms from the larger community is wrong and it is sinful. Frankly, why is it we need to defend ourselves against extremists? People who have neuroses or who are racist or bigoted? Sorry, not buying it. So I'm not going to tell you who you should vote for. But I will say this. You need to vote. And if you have a problem getting to the polls, give us a call in the church office and we will get you there. And then you can check off your little ballot and get your nice little sticker and go off and carry on your day. It's that important. I hope that you will go to the polls having prayed and having reflected with a sense of humility and a sense of faith. We are all called to be stewards of the community. And this year, on November 6th, one of the ways we will do that is by voting.